Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, this is Jonathan Watkins, one of the co-hosts of this episode of the Sincast, and I wanted to let you know before we get started that we do venture into some spoiler territory for the movie we are discussing, which is Lucky, starring and written by the immensely talented Bria Grant. So go watch the movie, which is available to rent or own, and is also streaming on Shudder, and then please come back and listen to our interview with Bria, because Lucky is both a pretty great film and a film that allows for fascinating conversations about it afterwards. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this interview.
Because when the movie was pitched to Natasha, they were like, Bria is attached to star. And I'm like, no, I'm not. no one asked me.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
Today we have a very special guest. It is writer, actor Bria Grant, who has a movie called Lucky coming out on VOD, digital HD, and DVD on August 3rd. Bria, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm also a director.
Yeah,
writer,
yeah.
Director and actor. I do all of them.
I would fit all the hyphenates in there. I was just focusing. I was just focusing on this movie. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay,
fine. Fair.
but yes, she does other things too, guys. Mm-hmm. No. I can't wait actually until I see your Nashville movie. So the basic premise of Lucky is that there is a man coming to you and your husband's house to kill you. And apparently this is something that happens all the time, but this movie is, about way more than that. I've never started an interview thinking maybe I shouldn't ask any questions. Maybe I should just have you just say all the stuff that's about the movie and we'll just sit here and shut up and listen to you talk.
That would be a weird interview.
It would be. But I sit here and I'm going, well, yeah, this is obviously blah, blah, blah. And you're like, you're such a man. And then I'd be like, all right. Okay, we'll just walk away.
No, I mean, that was kind of the whole point of the movie is that I think I wanted it to spark, and Natasha feels the same way. We wanted to spark conversations and we wanted people to take away from it what they took away. I think a lot of people will be really conflicted about the movie, and I'm not scared of that. I think it makes it cool.
right,
it is very cool.
Yeah, I don't know how much you want to get into it, because obviously people will want to have those discoveries for themselves, but I really, really want to have a spoiler conversation with you. I don't know how much we can touch around it, but I think we can sort of discuss what this is about, right? Which is, I feel like can we say that the killer is a metaphor for something?
Sure. I mean, look, it's your podcast. You tell me what I can spoil. I actually, listen, if you haven't seen the movie, go watch the movie and then come come fuck back. I don't know.
Like, right, right.
So, I mean, I would rather talk openly about it. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, the movie is obviously about like the broader problems of violence against women and how it is normalized. I mean, that's one of the big things we were trying to talk about. And I don't think that that is, I think you can get that from watching the trailer.
Okay. I Jonathan, I think we might have to put a spoiler tag
sure,
on this.
We can do that. Let's do, let's get into this.
I really want to get into this because I feel like the meat of this movie is all the different, you don't stop with just one kind, particular kinds of violence. I think all of them are here. You have the scary one is you and your husband, I believe. that's the scary one to me, because from the audience's perspective, this guy just seems kind of out of it, and he doesn't seem like he's really he's kind of harmless. But then I think throughout, if you're sort of paying attention to this movie, you realize this guy isn't harmless at all.
I mean, I think he is part of the system. I mean the whole thing is that she's in this world where it's completely normal to be attacked every night in your house. Someone is coming to find you. The character's name is May. So someone's coming to get May, and they're coming to try to kill her every night. And her husband's like, yeah, that's the guy who's going to try to kill you every night. And that happens in like the first, 15 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just that every person in this world is like, yeah, that's just the way it is. That's the way it is for you. That's the way it is for women. You're just, someone's trying to kill you every night. So, I mean, I don't know if he's a problem just because he's bought into the world, or if he, if there's something bigger. It's funny, in script, I wrote the script, and in script form, a lot more people were like, oh, was it him the whole time? How much was he, a part of it? But in movie form, it didn't feel, it's funny the way things translate. It felt like he was more just buying into the whole system for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mainly just because of the sort of the weird progression that's, if you're, you've written an unreliable narrator in some way, but I may be saying something offensive in a way by saying that.
I'd argue it's an unreliable world. Yeah. I think that it's her POV, right? So I think we, in some ways, yes, it is unreliable because we can't decide if what's really happening is happening. But I wanted it to be pretty clear from the beginning, like, this is happening. She's just kind of Alice down the rabbit hole. She's just right in a world that no longer makes sense for her and what she thinks the world should look like. But everyone else is like, no, it is very normal to have a slasher dedicated to you to come and kill you every single night. Yeah. That is a normal world. You're the one who's wrong, which I think is 100% how it feels sometimes, that I'm like, wow, this shouldn't be this way. And people are like, but it is.
Right.
Shrug.
Well, and the cops, and then, you end up in front of, not a therapist. It's a
social worker.
The Tara Perry. Yeah. Tara Perry is awesome in that role. By
She's
way.
So good. I know. Right.
And then also Chase Williamson popping up there towards the end as the paramedic. But these people are questioning you more about, your husband, and you keep telling them, no, like, there's somebody breaking into my house trying to kill me. And, but they keep wanting to know if there's any domestic issues with you and your husband. And it's just, it's insane. And it's, I can't even imagine, that's obviously the point, right? That it's supposed to just be like maddening.
Yeah. We're supposed to be seeing it from May's perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's very frustrating because she's like, my world isn't perfect, but that doesn't mean I should be attacked every night in my home and feel unsafe and have to fight for my life. Like, that doesn't, maybe my husband and I don't get along all the time. She's a real person. She's a human person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that she deserves, relentless, relentless attacks on her life.
Well,
no one does.
And it's sort of, there's always, I love this scene, that's in here where, I think before we even know that there's been an incident in a parking garage, that, that's sort of a revelation towards at the end. But she's just walking through a regular like lobby thoroughfare type place or whatever, and just hears some keys and gets rattled because of it. Because it's a sort of a memory that's associated with some sort of trauma that has happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much supposed to feel, it's PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way it feels when you have been through something and then something triggers that and reminds you of that. And then you, all of your senses go off. Everything feels weird. And you're trying to like be present in the world. But I mean, the world isn't yours anymore at that moment. And it's really not hers for the whole movie, really.
Yeah. I had a couple of different interpretations of the married relationship, because at first you're just like, at first one, I actually have watched this movie twice. Mm. The first time I watched it, I was like, nobody's listening to her. Like, she says it's not about her husband, but then she's got social workers coming and she's got all this stuff that, you know, this is just a sign of people just not listening to her and not believing her when she says things. But then the next time I watched it, I was like, I could see how you could think that maybe her husband is abusive and she sort of mm-hmm. created a cocoon around her, and she is sort of, all of these things that she's talking about do show that there's been some abuse, and she's rationalizing it in some way. Especially towards the end when he shows up in the backseat of your car and everything. So, and then if you take it that way and you start listening to what he says during those scenes, you're just like, oh my God, this guy's a monster. But maybe that's not how you intended it. And I think that's fascinating.
I mean, I think that's an interesting interpretation. He's not listening either. So yeah. I think that he's just, and at first it is a little normal, but then as the movie progresses, as movies do, it becomes more and more abnormal, and he's a part of the system, so he's not listening either.
Yeah.
It's a bit of gaslighting, it's a bit of not being listened to, no mm-hmm. one believing you that this is weird. And it even comes back to her primary relationship with the husband. It's funny, the husband, in many early drafts of the script, he actually never came back when I was writing it. And mm-hmm. I found that, and I'm not trying to call you out here, but I did find that women would read it and be like, oh, cool. And then the men would go, but where'd the husband go? And I was like, oh, it's not about the husband. I don't care where he went. And I realized at some point we had to account for him. We had to say, like, where is Ted? We have to figure out where the fuck he's been this whole movie.
Right.
Because the inspiration for this was from my personal life. And I found that it was one thing, I experienced a traumatic event, and the person I was dating at the time couldn't really understand it. And it was something that kind of broke us apart in some ways, because he was never able to understand it, which mm-hmm. makes sense. It didn't happen to him. But it also, it meant that his sympathy for me could only go so far, because he wasn't able to be empathetic. So I think in some ways I was writing through my own, finding a little bit of catharsis and working through why that relationship sort of fell apart, because I felt like that person never got it and never even attempted to get it and became a part of this world that wasn't really understanding me or listening to me.
Yeah, that's I was going to ask if there was any sort of your personal experience in this movie, but you're also saying, you know, you're not saying it stops with you. It's all of the women that are in this movie are dealing with things like that. I mean, even like the sister, it has some sort of past trauma that she's dealing with, that, you know, just, and your assistant and everybody in this. And at first this movie has such an unusual way about it. The husband is like, oh, that's the guy who comes and kills us, tries to come and kill us every night and whatever, and it's so blasé and everything, you think you might be in a comedy of some sorts. By the end of it, it's definitely not a comedy whatsoever. And I can't, that's the reason why I'm sitting there, I'm watching this with a man's eyes, and I see these type of things and I'm like, holy shit, what kind of world are we in? And this is just a nightmare to watch, no doubt about it.
Well, it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Good, I guess. I mean, but I do think, I mean, I do look, Natasha hired a lot of comedic actors. I have a sense mm-hmm. of dark humor to me. And I do think there are parts that we want people to kind of laugh through or be uncomfortable and laugh through, especially at the top. But I think the whole way through, I mean, really, like, May is the straight man going through this kind of absurdist world. And so it's okay to kind of laugh at the absurdity of the situation.
Well, and Jonathan alluded to it, the paramedic stuff is hilarious to me. Just the way that guy is acting all the way through it. You know, it's that scene is very well done. I love, like, all the, you know, how there's so many things going on at once. Somebody wants to take blood pressure. Somebody wants to take blood. Somebody wants to ask questions about the incident. They're all there. Everybody's there just asking questions.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I wanted to know, since you wrote and star in this movie, how is it that, how do you work with, you know, the director, and the director is Natasha Kamani, how do you work with that? You know, the material better than anybody else. So what is she able to, bring to you, when you are, doing a scene or whatever, if you're doing a scene a certain way and she, you know, maybe disagrees with how you're doing it or whatever.
I mean, look, I really believe in the filmmaking system as mm-hmm. as is. I think a film needs a really strong captain of the ship. It needs someone to steer things, and I think there should be one person, or, you know, sometimes you have a director team or something, but a person that says, like, yes or no and has sort of final say, because they have a vision and you need them to have that specific vision for the movie to feel coherent, for it to make sense. And so for me, I wrote the movie, we got it green, I took it to Epic Pictures, and they wanted to attach Natasha, and I was like, cool. So then mm-hmm. she and I worked together. There were a couple of changes we had to make just for budgetary reasons. And then after that point, I just stepped back. And I mean, she's very great at being true to the text on the page, and being very respectful of, like, of what I was writing and what I was trying to get at. And understood the humor, and she kind of just got it. I mean, I can't say we had any moments where I was like, ooh, I think you're wrong, you know, like, or she thought mm-hmm. I was wrong. I feel like we were kind of just on the same page for what the movie was mm-hmm. from, you know, we had a lot of conversations about it, but from the very beginning, she called me, I think she wasn't even finished with the script when she called me, and she was like, I get this movie. I know what it is. I want to make it. like, and I was like, oh, cool. Great. Cause I had a lot of conversations with other directors, other actors, when I was attached to direct for a while. I mean, like, so I had gone through a lot of conversations about this movie because it is weird. And on the page, it's weird. And it's like, you needed someone who was like, I need someone who was like, I'm going to embrace the fact that it's a surreal slasher movie, like that you're taking a slasher and trying to do something really different. And she just got it from the beginning. So I can't say we had any moments where we really disagreed. And if she if she saw something a certain way, I kind of just was like, great, do that. I believe in her vision, and I wanted her to make the movie she wanted to make, because at the end of the day, she's really the one who has to defend it.
Yeah, I feel like you have hit a moment of zen that many writers maybe haven't. I feel like most writers seeing their work being put to the screen probably feel like, well, I wouldn't have done that, or I wouldn't have done it this way, or whatever. And that way, was there an experience early on that led you to sort of have that trust in everything, or have you always been that way?
I think it's because I direct too. So I think I respect the role of director. And mm-hmm. I know, you know, a lot of times you're directing and people come in and they're like, I have this opinion. And you're like, yeah, but I've thought about this for a long time. And what you're saying doesn't, I have a plan here. Like, I have a plan. And like, you may not know the minutia of the plan. You may not know the details. So you're going to come in with like this random ass idea on this random day. Like, this doesn't work. It doesn't work for whatever reason. So I think it comes from me just trying to respect the fact that I think she's a brilliant director. I think she knows what the hell she's doing, and I'm going to stand by her. And I really think the moment if you don't stand by your director and you start to cause chaos and things don't work out well in the shooting, you're not going to end up with a good movie. You know, right. I think it's important. Like, once I've decided like she's going to be the leader, I have to actually trust in her as a leader.
She's outstanding. I saw Imitation Girl around when it came out. I just found that film absolutely fascinating. And this was a great follow up. And then the thing about, you were talking about you were going to direct it. Would you have still, were you still going to be, because you're in every scene, right? Like, I don't.
I am in every scene. I wasn't ever planning on being in it.
Oh, gotcha.
That came about because when the movie was pitched to Natasha, they were like, Bria is attached to star. And I'm like, no, I'm not. no one asked me. And I really thought it wasn't a good character for me. It's funny. Y'all keep saying like you, and I'm like, this woman is as far from me as I could ever imagine. Like, she's so not who I am. I didn't even know how I could play her, because I was like, I'm just not this person. But Natasha really saw me as her. And like, you know, we redid my hair. We redid a lot of stuff. We bought like the clothes that I'm in. Like, everything was very specifically designed and kind of took me out of the person that I normally am, my actual Bria, am. And she did a good job of kind of bringing me out of that through like my look. I never would have. I really, writing and directing and starring is it's tough. I did it in my first movie, and I'm not really interested in doing it anymore.
Speaking of your directing, by the way, I watched 12 Hour Shift this morning.
Mornings.
yeah, it's great. It's great. Have some coffee on a Saturday morning, watch 12 Hour Shift.
That's funny.
I've been meaning to watch it for a long time. Like a lot of us, we have huge, you know, to be watched piles. Since we were going to be talking to you, I definitely wanted to check it out. It was fantastic. I mean, fantastic. I mean,
thank you.
And Angela, if we can't talk, I'm just curious, working with Angela Bettis, who I love, working with her, what was that like, or what?
Awesome. It's a dream. I mean, she's great. She's I've been a fan of hers for a long time, and we she comes to play, you know, like she brings it. And because she was there, I think it stepped up the entire rest of the cast. Everyone was like looking at her, and she's really good. She's not screwing around. Like she's great. And I loved working with her, and I was so happy she agreed to do that movie, because it's a very small movie. And like she came out to Arkansas for a month and shot it with us. And we'd love to get to work with her again.
Obviously it was a small movie, but it doesn't look like a small movie, which is just awesome. I mean, it feels like something, you know, like I don't want to compare it to other people, but just like, you know, it in that vein of like Coen Brothers or something like that. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. Sorry, I'm just laughing. And let me just tell you, this is how you know it's a small movie. The guy who's like in the bed in a coma the whole time.
Yeah.
That was our sound guy. That's how small it was, is that we didn't have anyone to play that role. And the crew, whatever you think the crew is, divide it by, you could count the crew on two hands. Like, it's a very small movie. You're like, you don't like very, very small. But thank you. I wanted it to be a Coen Brothers style movie, so I appreciate
and,
it.
And Chloe Farnworth, I'm going to be watching some more of her. She's amazing.
She's a genius. I know. She's so funny.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get us off track, but I didn't want to mention that movie because I loved it so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In Lucky, what was your favorite scene to write?
To write?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. So a scene that wasn't in the movie till later was this parking garage scene. I had written a couple drafts of it, and I had a friend reading it, and he was like, you know, you're just like missing something. Something's not here. And I was like, I know, I just don't know what it is. And I started trying to think. I was like, okay, this is a story about violence against women. It's about the systematic violence against women, like the way we just are like, oh, this is normalized. Like, why? What is the story there? And I started thinking about like, oh, women are scared of parking garages. It's like something you're told from a very young age. Like, don't, if you're alone in a parking garage, like have your keys in your hand in a certain way, or have your mace out, or whatever it is, because that's where like someone might, you know, grab you or whatever, or you might get attacked, or someone might get in your car with you. And so it was finding that scene and finding a way to make a broader statement and make the movie feel a little bit bigger, because it is a really small movie. Like you said, I mean, I'm in every scene. There, a lot of days it was me and the guy playing the man, Lovely Hunter, or me and like one other actor. Like, it was like, it's a very small movie, and like most of the actors were in for like a day. And that was a much bigger day. We got to have like stunt people, and like just thinking about that as like a way to expand the movie, because that's always what you're trying to do with these low budget movies, right? You're trying to find a way to make the world feel a little bit bigger. And you're like, it's not just this one story. It's the world. And so finding that scene, like, what I felt like it was when the movie started making sense, where I was like, okay, now I got the movie. Now it's not just a woman running for her life the whole movie. It's like, oh, we have something a little bit bigger to say here.
Yeah. That's the one scene in the movie that just seems like all the stops were pulled. You know, the way the lights are, there's that running through the hallway with the red lights flashing, and, you know, they're all the different women who are getting attacked and everything. It's the starkest part of the movie. It's the one that, you know, sort of puts its stamp on that. It's interesting that wasn't even in the script at first, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And it's, I mean, as a writer, you're always trying to find, like, you're like, what is the set piece? What is the big pivotal scene that people will be talking about, or like will get a director interested, or will like get a financing company to be like, yes, we'll give you some money. And for me, that was the scene that felt like, okay, like if they can like get on board for the premise, which is like, you know, him saying like, oh, this is the guy who attacks you every night. If they're on board for that and they make it through this parking garage scene, then like, they'll realize this movie is a little bit something is special for a movie of this size.
And here's a really original question to follow that up with. What was your favorite scene to act in?
Well, doing that scene with Tara was fun, because Tara Perry plays this social worker in the movie. Mm-hmm. And she had just been one of the stars of 12-Hour Shift, which we mm-hmm. shot 3 weeks before that. So like, I just worked with her as a director, and then I got to work with her as an actor. So that was cool. And then Nikia Gamby Turner is also in 12-Hour Shift, and she's in the scene with Chase Williamson, and mm-hmm. Jesse Merlin and a bunch of other cool people are in this scene where everyone's like shouting at me, and they bring in the song at one point and stuff. And that was really fun, especially since as an actor, like, I'm by myself for a lot of the movie, just like walking around the house, like fighting, like, I mean, I'm just doing like not, it's a lot of physical acting, but it's not as much of like getting to interact off of with other actors. And so that was like a really fun scene to get to play with.
One of my scenes that I don't know what it is about it, but you stab the man in the neck and the blood starts spurting all over
you. Oh, yeah.
What was that like? Is that something where you're like, okay, I can't, I know I'm going to hate life after this.
Yeah.
Or is this awesome?
No, it's about like, you know, when you go to like a water park and you're going down like with a log ride. I actually don't do the log ride anymore because I get so mad, because at the end you're like, that was fun. Why the fuck did I do that? That's the feeling, is that you're like, why am I now? Because then, you know, everyone has to rush over to you because we're shooting this like very nice house in Altadena, and you're like, don't touch the floor, or don't touch the carpet. Because you're covered in blood. But right. No, Natasha and my producer was there that day, and they all thought it was very funny and recorded videos and laughed at me. So I got covered in blood because it is a full fountain of blood falling onto my face.
Yeah, this is I feel like as a director, where you're just like, I get to torture my cast today. Yeah.
You know what? It's not, though. I think like the fun thing about making horror is that like we're all kind of there for those reasons a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like we enjoy the like special effects of it all, and like we enjoy those fun moments. And it's what kind of separates making a horror movie from making just like a drama or a comedy, is that you know you're going to have these cool moments where everyone kind of gathers around and we get to watch this fun thing. And then I'll watch it in playback, obviously, but but it's fun, and you get to like really, it is a lot of playing. And even though it's scary, and you're just hoping you're not going to screw it up the whole time because you have so few takes on these size movies. I think we did that, and we just did it in one take. That was the only,
oh nice.
That was it. That's all we had.
Wow. They just called you one take, Bria. After
one
that,
take. Well, it's just like being cleaned up after that was impossible. So it was like, this is it. This is all you got.
One of my also favorite scenes was when I can't think of anything right now. Agent shows up. Is it Leith? Is that the actor?
Oh yeah, Leith. Yeah.
Leith. Sorry, I didn't know how to pronounce it. But when he shows up at your door and you're like in the middle of dealing with all this stuff, and he's, you know, basically like, you know, they're gonna do your new book. And then there's that moment where he says you're lucky because of the industry or whatever. And you're really good in that moment. And I really appreciated that, because that is one of those things that I think, because this movie is as much about probably about the entertainment industry too, right? I mean, just how hard it is. What?
No, I could hear a knowing laugh behind that question, so that's why I'm laughing.
But I'm just saying, like, I mean, how hard it is to get in any job in this industry, you know, writing, directing, acting, I mean, even writing for YouTube like we do. But but then you always hear that, right? You always hear people say, wow, you must feel really lucky. And it's like, I mean, maybe there's some luck involved, but I worked my ass off to get here, you know? And I appreciated that moment, 'cause I know you have to feel that a lot.
Yeah. That's my mom's favorite part of it too, the movie. 'Cause she was like, oh, that was you in that moment. You actually brought yourself. Yeah. I mean, no, obviously, look, the entertainment industry has to answer your question, yes, that was me taking out some frustration with the entertainment industry for sure. But I think, look, I will be the first to admit, especially with acting, I think there is a lot of luck involved. It's unfortunately like 99% luck. It's being mm-hmm. the right look, the right physicality, the right body type, the right race for the right role. And I think even with writing and directing, there is a lot of luck to it. There's a lot of that, but I do think that the luck, if you haven't put in the hard work, you're probably not going to have the luck.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's funny. I was doing another interview for this, and someone was like, what do you say to people when they are like, oh, you don't deserve to be directing these movies or something like that? And I was like, who says that about me? I was like, first of all, who's saying that? 'Cause I'm mad. Second of all, I think, you know, I do. I mean, I treat this like a job. I've treated it like a job for 15 years. I get up every day. I get up at an early hour. I write before everyone else gets up in the morning. Like mm-hmm. before my manager can call me. I have to say before he gets up. That's not true. He gets up very early, but before he'll call me. So like before 8 a.m., I have my writing done. I'm overly prepped for everything I do. Like I just don't. There is a lot of luck involved, but I will say like when the opportunity comes, I try to be really ready. And I also called my friends who've written a lot of books when I was writing that little speech, because I was like, what happens when you're on book tour? Like, what's the annoying things that happen? They're like, you just have to answer the same questions all the time. And it's just really irritating. You have to be like enthusiastic. And I was like, oh yeah, I get that. Yeah. So yeah. I added that one in there too. 'Cause I was like, yeah, it's a frustrating thing to have to do just to be able to make and, you know, sell your art.
Yeah, hope you sold an extra couple copies that day.
And you said something with like a more of a smile on your face.
Yeah. And like, I think it's one of those things. I mean, when you hear that, like, I mean, cause, and also, you know, you hear the it's who you know and stuff like that. And I mean, I know people don't mean that. You know, I think they think they're complimenting you in some way. And it always just feels a little backhanded, you know, when you hear that. So that scene was great. And you were awesome in it. So it was just, that was one of my favorite scenes.
Thanks. And that actor is amazing. I just want to shout him out. He's an Emmy nominated actor who I worked with. I directed him on a show called Eastsiders before we did the movie. Oh, and I called him and I was like, will you please come and do this? I need you for like 2 days on the, and he was totally down. And he's super funny, super talented. Great guy.
Yeah. He's on Bosch. I remember.
Oh, cool.
You know, that scene also brings up the fact that there's so many. I like when there's just these little throwaway lines that you might hear over the end of a phone conversation or whatever. You sprinkle them throughout here. But they're stubborn, we're crazy was one that stood out to me. Yeah. No one's going to, the killer's not going to come now. It's daytime. Like the part of the day matters.
Everybody kept saying that.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you've probably, have you heard these like over and over and over in your life? Basically, did you even some that you didn't even get to put in? There were so many, probably.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for noticing that. Yes, this was something in the script, I wanted to have as many cliches as possible because I think they're so stupid. Like, they're so stupid. Yeah. Like, the cliches and the things people say, and they say them without thinking about how they've just, and it's supposed to go along with this theme of just like, we've normalized things. We've normalized saying certain things where we're like, oh, you're so lucky. Like that we've normalized saying that. And it's like, that's really not true. And just because you say it a bunch of times doesn't make it true.
right.
And just because you say, oh, women, you know, women are crazy or whatever, like that doesn't make it true. That I think things are put on us that the world is crazy. We're not crazy. Thank you. That was definitely something I was trying to put into the script to hang a lantern on the fact that we're in a world in which we just don't even think about what's going on anymore. We don't think about what's being said, and we don't think about the fact that this woman is fighting for her life, and it's should be abnormal, but it's not.
You know, you could run. I feel like you could run this movie as a double feature with The Invisible Man.
Thank you.
You know, because both have a lot to say about this topic, and you know, Invisible Man is obviously a big, huge studio movie with Elizabeth Moss. You know, but it's got the same kind of. I think it has the same kind of weight to it. Because this is kind of stuff that people need to know, because there's a lot. It's easy to watch a movie like this and be like, I am now informed of what's going on. And then you go out into the world and people still are spouting out that same stuff. And you're like, I disagree. I have to disagree with you.
Yeah. And it's kind of one of those things, too, where I mean, I think we sit there and say, you know, we really like a movie. I don't know how often I say I appreciate a movie, and I absolutely appreciated this movie. It just, you know, it's just a perspective that I'm an old dude.
How old are you?
Oh, I'm 45.
It's not very old. Don't say that. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate The Invisible Man because I like that I like having these like older adult final girls. I think that's something Natasha and I talked a lot about, where these final girls they're not girls. They're women. They're adults, and they are complicated, and they have histories, and they make poor choices sometimes, and they are also ingrained in, there's things in them that like I don't agree with, that I'm like, why did she not help everyone? You know, but I think that's who she was as a person. And in Lucky, not in Invisible Man, but I think there's, yeah, I like having these women of us like over 30,
yeah,
which, you know, we don't get to see in horror movies that often. And I love horror movies, but I'm getting older and I want to see myself.
Me too.
I mean, not literally, but like I want to see versions of like, you know, older women in these roles doing like cool shit and surviving.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I grew up in the 80s. I mean, I love 80s slashers and stuff, but I do love this new, like, I feel like we're getting more of this. You know, Grady Hendrix just released the book, Final Girl Support Group.
And it's
amazing. I love this new, like, which I guess we had the Final Girls was a movie that came out a few years ago, and maybe that kind of started, I don't know, but I just love this whole new thing where it's like the post Final Girl movies where like what happens to them afterwards, you know? Mm-hmm. There's just and this definitely falls kind of in that territory. So no, I'm with you.
Yeah, and it's a great thing about horror, right? I mean, we just mm-hmm. I think as horror fans, we're also aware of the tropes that we're like, we can take them and we can start playing with them without mm-hmm. even having to reintroduce them to an audience. That's why you can write the Final Girl Support Group. And I people who haven't read it, you need to pick it up if you like horror, because every chapter is like it's every amazing. Character in it, he never explains like, oh, this is like Laurie Strode or whatever. He never explains like who they are, but he's like, he hints enough to where you're like, oh, I get it. This was Texas Chainsaw. This, you know,
how he titles the chapters is even amazing.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Where was the shot? Did you find a house to rent out? And where was sort of the location?
Yeah, we did. Altadena, which is right, it's in Los Angeles, outside of Los Angeles. We found that house and we rented it, and we had a really great production designer named LB, and the inside of the house changed a lot, but it had that beautiful architecture in it that looked amazing. But yeah, we shot in LA, which was how we got these great one day guest stars, because otherwise we wouldn't have guest stars. I guess that's TV talk, but one day roles where you get someone like Chase or Tara or somebody coming in for a day.
Someone that lives down the street can
basically you're like, can you please come in for a day? It won't be very long. And they're like, okay. Like that's how you do it. Cause if we were shooting somewhere else, it's much harder to get those people in for a day. I mean, they're just not going to do it. They don't have the time.
Yeah, Chase was one of those where I was like, God, I know him. And then I looked him up. I was like, oh, he's in John Dies at the End. Like, he's the main guy. Yeah.
He and I have done, I think, 3 or 4 movies together.
Yeah, I saw that.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Another thing that sort of stuck out to me in this was the music. Jeremy Zuckerman was behind the music on this, I guess. There's like this, I don't know what it is, sort of a keyboard, dissonant keyboard type of soundtrack to this thing that's really cool, I think.
That's all Natasha. I have to just give credit to her. It's vocalization. There's some vocalization in there, and there's definitely some strings and stuff in there too. And yeah, they did a amazing job. Like he was recommended by a producer because of his work on Scream, the TV series. But then Natasha listened to his work and was like, I like the weirder stuff he does. And so he was willing to come do this small movie because she was like, go really weird with it. And I think it really worked.
I think I have one more before we – Jonathan, do you have anything else after this question? Because I think we're running up against it.
Well, just go ahead and ask your question. Yeah, we're getting there. So we're good.
We alluded to the book signing scene and in this and everything, and maybe this is just an innocuous scene for you as an actor. I don't know. It seems like it to me. I always see a scene like this where you're not the cool person. You're being the one that's like, you know, having to answer people in this, you know, like, well, I don't have anything going. I don't have anything. You know, I'm not here. I'm not going to be your hero today. Basically, but are those scenes tough to do a lot of time?
I remember there was a lot of words that day that I had to memorize, but no, I mean, I think it's about showing vulnerability, right? I mean, like in those scenes, I just think of times where, I mean, this, you do this all the time, right? Especially as an actor, when I was mostly just acting, it was, you know, people are like, oh, what's next for you? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, like, I mean, that's a real thing is that you're kind of like, whatever people call me for will be what's next for me. You know, you are kind of trying to figure it out, because we don't always have things, especially as creatives, that we're like ready to like, you know, like pimp out. It's weird. I mean, I think we're so we're so required to like have that. Well, what's your next thing? And then what are you doing after that? And like, I don't know. It's not that you're not the cool person. I think it's that you're the like, I don't know. It's like a vulnerability, I guess, that happens in that moment. And like it showing that vulnerability that, I mean, I've been there. I've totally been there. I distinctly remember I shot Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. And then that movie came out like really fast. Like we shot it in the spring and it came out in Halloween, like around Halloween. I was at an interview and they were like, oh, what is everyone doing next? And like everyone there like had like some huge movie. And I was like, I'm promoting Halloween 2. I don't know. I don't have anything. I had started writing graphic novels and I was like, ooh, do I even talk about that? That's like not something people are interested in me doing and it doesn't have anything to do with acting. And like, is that worth even bringing up? Which, you know, ended up being like one of the great joys of my life is writing graphic novels. But at the time I was like, I don't even know what to say. So I think it's like, you know, you pull from your whole life. And that was, I've definitely had moments where I didn't know what the hell I was doing next.
Yeah. I saw that you wrote graphic novels. I was not aware of that. So I'm going to be definitely ordering some of those. I'm a comic guy. So.
Oh, please do. Order my latest one. I mean, it's YA, but I guarantee you'll get something out of it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
No, I probably asked that question weird. I've had this fascination with actors who get into these scenes. You always hear about, I loved playing this villain because you get to sink your teeth into these lines and all this, or I like to be this because there's all this stuff. But when you're the main character who gets forced into a scene where you're not the cool one and you don't have the best things to say, I always wonder if that's a scene that you are looking forward to, or if it's just like, you know, I can do this and no problem, whatever. But it sounds like it was like any other scene. You just prepare and you do the thing that you need to do.
Yeah, no, but I think you're right. I mean, I do kind of like it. I like playing I kind of like working out some of my demons and dealing with my vulnerabilities. And I don't like playing people who are 100% cool or 100% like above board or, you know, doing good stuff all the time. Like I like playing complicated characters. I like writing complicated characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely going to always lean more into that. In any sort of thing I'm doing.
All right. I guess we're going to have to wrap it up.
Man, by the way, I could talk to you an hour about Halloween too. I'm so curious about working with Rob Zombie. Like,
you have time for one question.
Awesome.
If I have one question about another movie, I actually want to know about filming the karaoke scene in After Midnight.
Oh my God. So I'm on this shoot right now and these guys were like, my PAs on this shoot were like, yeah, we went to a bar after the shoot trying to forget about work. And then at the bar, they were playing After Midnight on the TV and it was that karaoke scene. And I was like, oh my God, you had to deal with your director like staring you down while you're trying to get a beer, my poor PAs. But I thought it was very funny. That karaoke scene it took all night. It was a very long night. But honestly, again, I'm going to bring up my mother. My mother saw that movie and was like, that's the best acting you've ever done. And I was like, I agree. I don't know if I need to be acting anymore. It was literally like, I was like, I don't know. I have nothing else to prove. I feel like I proved it all. Like this was the character is very similar to me. Like I felt like 100% I brought everything I wanted to bring. And I was like, what do I need? What do I have to show now? But yeah, it was great. It was fun. And I love Jeremy so much, so I could stare into his eyes all day.
Jeremy Gardner's who you're talking about, and if anybody hasn't seen After Midnight, please check it out. It is that karaoke scene is one of the best WTF moments ever.
It is, but he plays it so sincerely.
Oh, it's
like,
great,
and it's so weird because you know. As an actor, it's weird because he has to do it a bunch of times and then they have to shoot me just watching him for like a full song length, like which is a very long time to not say anything and just have a camera like literally, you know, 3 feet from your face. But it was great. That was just it was very hot shooting that movie. It was very small, a very small movie. And it was like one of the greatest movies I've ever got to be a part of.
I just want to mention real quick, I listen to Reading Glasses quite often.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know. With all that you have going on, I have no idea how you do a podcast that frequently, because I don't have nearly as much as you.
I was late to your podcast because I was recording reading glasses. We went over. I'm sorry I was late. I was trying.
Oh, no, not a problem at all. No. It was Mallory's fault, right?
It was Mallory's fault. No, it's never Mallory's fault. That's the problem. She's on board.
We'd like to thank Bria Grant for giving us her time. The movie's Lucky comes out on VOD, digital HD, and DVD on August 3rd. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.